Okay, guys, football world never stops turning, and that's why I am here in New Jersey speaking to Jenny Vrentis, who's at the Scouting Combine in Indianapolis for another episode of the Weekside Podcast. Jenny, I was unable to join you this week. I think it's the first time in 10 years that I have not gone to the Combine. I remember going to the Combine for the first time with you, like in 2010. So, I don't know. I feel like I'm missing out a little bit. What's going on out there?
Well, Connor, you're very missed here, as always. But, you know, it's a little bit like Groundhog Day. Same hallways, same convention center carpeting, same skyways. The biggest development of the week was that the Starbucks at the JW Marriott is undergoing renovations. So the area around the Starbucks, which is like a hot meeting spot, has been diminished. There's like only two tables now, and so people are finding other places to meet, which has really thrown a wrench in the combine. The other thing is the change in schedule. Everyone has seemed a little bit disoriented and not quite sure where to be when, but other than that, you know, pretty much the same.
For those who are unaware, I mean, the JW Marriott Starbucks was where, you know, the place to see and be seen. You know, you would kind of stake people out there. Coaches would come in the morning. Freddie Kitchens, I think, famously went, which is the first time I heard of this, that you can order a coffee at kids temperature, it's called, so you can just chug it.
Wow.
But not iced coffee. He wants it warm but not hot.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
But I think the most interesting thing, and we'll get to Joe Burrow later on in the topics, but you were, again, it seems like the past few days have been defined by you kind of hanging out, waiting for some massive CBA news in a hotel lobby somewhere. So what happened this time in Indianapolis, and how did that all come together? Because it seemed like a from nowhere to like a very significant four-hour meeting.
Yeah, specifically, a lot of time in Conrad Hotel. So we were in the Conrad in New York and back in the Conrad in Indianapolis. So after the owners voted last week, the players decided not to vote yet and scheduled a bargaining session or at least some kind of meeting with the owners. Both sides met on Tuesday night in Indianapolis to see where things stood. And at the end of the night, everyone departed the hotel. No comment. The players continued to meet. And, you know, after midnight, between 1 and 2 a.m., I believe it was, they said that they've decided to bring the proposed CBA to a vote for the entire player membership. And they only needed 50% of the player reps to approve sending the proposed CBA to the full membership vote. But that happened in the early hours Wednesday morning. And as we're speaking Thursday, Connor, that is still where it stands. So DeMora Smith talked to reporters this morning outside the annual agent seminar they had. And he said, basically, they've got to get the agreement drawn up and sent to the players before they do the vote of everybody. If the players pass it, which would require just more than 50% of all of the players who vote. So again, we're talking some 2,000 players are eligible to vote. And of the ones who do vote, just more than 50% have to vote yes. And so there's a lot of speculation about what will happen. I think there is an expectation that players will vote yes, because there are so many, about 60% of the membership are minimum salary players who would increase by $100,000 in the first year and more over the life of the deal. But no one truly knows, because there have also been a lot of outspoken critics, star players, people who are player reps, who are in some of these meetings. So while I think people are thinking that this will pass, until the votes are cast, there's no, you can't say anything with certainty. It's a little bit like an election here, Connor. I feel like we're saying, you know, well, we can guess what we think will happen. And, you know, there's a sense here in Indianapolis, right, that you can proceed with some business as usual, you know, do your player evaluations, have your free agent meetings. But a lot of terms are uncertain, because if an agreement is struck, the 2020 league year would be played under the first year of the new CBA. And if one is not struck, then you would play out the final year of the existing CBA, which has all those different rules, including the use of an extra tag. The start of the league year is March 18th, and while they could delay it, my understanding is that the owners would not want that. They like the fact that March 18th is something of a deadline for the players to get the vote done, And while no one has committed to a timeline, that is a date that lingers out there. Is like, all right, they've probably got a vote before then.
Is it a case of, like, you know, just reading between the tea leaves a little bit and seeing what the players are tweeting? Is it a case of, like, the haves and have-nots a little bit in the football world? I mean, are star players kind of aligned on one side, and then you're sort of, to borrow a Jenny term, the Jags on the other?
Yeah, just another guy, right? I do think there is a split along those lines. I do think that the idea is for a majority of players, kind of these core roster guys that are not your stars, that they designed a CBA that they wanted to benefit those guys. And so I think that that's why there's this expectation that this will pass, because they'll say, we don't want to pass up this immediate increase in salary and you know, on benefits and other things like that. So there is a divide along those lines. But I will say one thing that really surprised me was that Demoris Smith said that nobody wants 17 games. And that was a condition that the owners presented to do a deal early. In other words, before the expiration of the current CBA. So this would be 1 year early, and they would tear up the rest, the final year of that agreement. I thought it was a little bit strange to hear the executive director of the players' union say that nobody wants 17 games while simultaneously pitching a proposal with 17 games.
Right.
I'm having a little trouble reconciling this, right? And so basically the starting point was 17 games, and they figured, how much can we get for the 17 games? And so the calculus has sort of been, have we gotten enough for 17 games? But there have been so many players opposed to 17 games, and in this climate where we know so much more about head injuries and player health and safety, I thought that would be a much tougher hurdle to clear. But it seems as if the owner said, hey, if you want to do this deal a year early and you want to get some better benefits and some more money to your guys and roster expansions and extra jobs, our starting point is 17 games, which I understand where the owners are coming from, but I'm a little bit, it's sort of hard to understand how you're pitching a proposal when you say that you know that no one in your membership would want a 17th game, which is not an insignificant. It's a major concession. It's a sea change in how NFL schedules are constructed. So that comment truly surprised me.
I don't think, you know, I can kind of look forward to the end of the season, and, you know, there's probably going to be something exciting happening in week 18 or whatever, and everyone's going to be like, oh, thank God, more football. I'm not going to be that person. I'm also against a 17 game season. So,
yeah,
for what it's worth.
Yeah, I'm the same. You know, and you know, we've talked about different season formats, and I know, you know, we've kind of speculated about things in the past. So, what would it look like with 17 games, and would there be a neutral site and international site games? And you know, in the past, we've talked about that and gone over those scenarios. But I never have thought that's a good idea or a fair idea for the players. And I think the other thing is, if you're going to go to the 17th game without the second bye, I think that is really bizarre. To not go down to two preseason games and give the second bye. That was the only scenario in which I thought a 17th preseason game might be okay. Because then you're saying to players, we're giving you a second bye and we're reducing the preseason to two games. So I thought that might be something of a compromise, but they're not getting the second bye and they're still at three preseason games. So to me, this seems not equitable.
I also think a second bye is good for everybody because, you know, during the season, it gives your star players an extra week to heal. And, you know, that's when a lot of coaches figure out their best stuff. You know, they self-scout, they're able to reevaluate some things and come up with some stuff. I think the Titans are certainly one of those teams that we saw really figure some exciting things out after their bye week. But I don't know. Who knows? This just seems like, while it's not, it is still decidedly less testy, I think, than the last one, but maybe we're headed in that direction where it's going to start getting a little more intense.
It's definitely, it seems like there was a concerted effort to make it less testy. And you know what? I don't know if that's necessarily the right thing when you're having such a significant change as expanding the season from 16 to 17 games.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get to the news, Jenny, here. Feels like we've been talking about this topic for 2 months now, but maybe we're nearing the end. Who knows? ESPN's Jeff Darlington reported this week that he'd be stunned at this point if Tom Brady returns to the New England Patriots. This is on the heels of a report from the Boston Globe saying that Bill Belichick sees no sense in discussing a new contract with Brady until the CBA is ratified. The Raiders, the Titans, and the Giants have all been mentioned as potential suitors. Does it feel like we've ended this sort of positing phase, or is this merely just a heightened level of performance that both sides are putting on?
Well, I just want to say that I don't truly believe that anyone knows how this is going to end. I think that maybe Tom is preparing people for potential outcomes. Like, I think that makes sense. But I think I'm having a hard time saying, like, projecting what the outcomes could be when it sounds like, from what I can gather, that no one truly knows.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that there's places that I'd like to see something happen. I think that the football spectator and all of us would be interested to see what would happen if he went elsewhere, but who knows? I mean, certainly his agent, Don Yee, is at the Combine, so that would mean that, you know, while he does have other clients, that this is probably something that's going to come up over the course of his week there. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. This probably isn't the formal wooing process, but maybe the wooing process before the wooing process.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of reports that there has been no contact between the Patriots and Brady's camp, and I do not believe that to be true. Whether those conversations were substantial or not is another thing, but I do not believe that there's been zero contact between the sides. So I think it's just kind of this weird vacuum of, like, no one knows how this is going to end, and a lot of things are being thrown out there. In terms of, like, other landing spots, though, Connor, like, that is what I'm really struggling with, because I can wrap my head around the idea that he could play elsewhere. Like, I think we all are, you know, we know how the league works. We, of course, know that's a possibility. I'm just not sure that any of the possibilities that have been mentioned, like, make a ton of sense for either side.
Except for the Raiders.
You're really on that, Connor.
It's interesting because, and we'll kind of get to the quarterback carousel in a little bit, but this is the second straight combine where Derek Carr has gotten, like, a super passive response from his coaches. You know what I mean? Like, everything's like, we're always looking to get better, you know, and that's sort of the mantra that a lot of coaches say. But I think that metric-wise, he's a very good quarterback, and probably not the kind of, he's probably just inside that benchmark where you don't go into every offseason saying, hey, we're trying to get better at every position. You could say, yeah, I feel pretty good about what we have under center.
I think we're gonna get into that a little bit later. A lot of these interesting answers about the quarterbacks on the podium press conferences at the combine, but I don't know, Connor. You know, another thought that I had that was, I don't know why this popped into my head earlier today, but, like, would the coronavirus potentially interfere with any free agent wooing?
Ooh.
What if, like, things get kind of intense over the next couple weeks? You know, we talked about the league year potentially being moved because of the CBA, but what if it has to be moved because of coronavirus?
Wow. That's interesting, right?
Could affect the Raiders' pitch to Tom Brady in the new stadium that you described in our last week's show.
So, Tom, we're going to cover the entire thing in Saran wrap for you, and so that way no sickness can come in. And this is a totally coronavirus-free stadium. That might be part of the plan.
But, you know, in terms of the CBA, like, it is hard to, you know, when you're doing these negotiations. I think some of it is a sense of, like, okay, do we want this player or not? But if you're getting into the specifics of, like, what the contract would look like and you don't know what the terms of the 2020 league year are going to be, I do think that slows things down. So there has been frustration that I've heard from head coaches and GMs about not knowing exactly what terms the 2020 year will be played under. And it's only reasonable to expect that that has contributed to, or that has been a part at least of the Brady Patriots interactions. I mean, from what I can understand, it's on every head coach and GM's mind. So it only makes sense to assume that would be a factor in the Patriots conversations as well.
Very interesting. All right. What do we have for number two?
The Colts, not surprisingly, have emerged as a favorite to sign longtime Chargers quarterback Philip Rivers. What, if anything, does this do to the landscape of a fascinating AFC South that features the Texans, who are one meltdown away from hosting the AFC Championship game, and the Titans, who actually played in said championship game?
I don't know. I mean, Philip Rivers, to me, like, I feel bad about saying that he sort of feels like the veteran quarterback consolation prize right now, you know, even though it might end up working out better for wherever he goes, especially if he goes to the Colts, where he's familiar with Nick Sirianni and Frank Reich, and he can just pick up the offense and just kind of push them a little bit further than they've been in the past. But I don't know. I can't get Rivers fever yet. I don't know. I'm just not excited about it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that was because his 2019 season was pretty disappointing, and you know there were accuracy issues, and the line had injuries, and so the ability for him to operate the offense behind a line that was struggling with his lack of mobility, which has always been true through his career, but that really showed up with the line injuries. So I think it is sort of hard. I agree, Connor. I mean, first of all, it's a year with more quarterback turnover than we've seen in quite some time. But then it's also like, well, Brady is one of the quarterbacks that is. So, you know, it's hard to say, like, okay, all eyes are on Rivers. In a different year, it might be one of the more intriguing storylines. But this year, of course, it's all talk about Brady.
Is he a division changer, Philip Rivers?
I don't believe so, Connor. I don't believe so.
I don't either. Like, I still think that if I were to have my ability to pick teams, I would still probably pick the Texans to win that division next year, or in 2020, this year. And I don't know. I mean, I don't, maybe second place with Philip Rivers. I think that's probably fair, assuming that it would be difficult for the Titans to do what they did again, especially after a 400 carry year from Derrick Henry. So I don't know. I just feel like they're kind of a second place team.
Yeah, I would also say that the Texans are the favorites because they have the most exciting quarterback who can change a game in a second and who makes plays out of nothing. I guess the only caveat is, back to topic number one, you know, let's say the Titans bring in Brady. I don't know.
Game changer.
Game. Maybe that's the game changer for the AFC South.
All right, prospective number one pick Joe Burrow kept his head above ground during his much-anticipated Combine press conference, assuring reporters that he would have no problem playing for the troubled Bengals. Jenny, you were memorialized in a photo from the New York Post, took a big picture of the press conference. I would say that you looked skeptical at best. How did you walk away from this?
Well, unfortunately, I have resting skeptical face, so that is just my face in any situation. I thought Burrow went pretty far to trying to dispel some of the rumors, to dispel some of the speculation. He was directly asked, which he had not been to that point, if the Bengals draft you, will you report? And he said yes. But it was like one of those weird answers where it was like, I'm not going to play. Like, didn't sound enthused necessarily, but I did think his strongest answer came later, where he was like, hey, look, guys, like, this was a lot of speculation. I never said this. All I said was, or I didn't want to be presumptuous. I didn't want to assume that I was the number one pick. Maybe the Bengals fall in love with someone else. So I thought his statements on Tuesday were his strongest to date, and I think he was hoping that that press conference quieted some of the speculation. Certainly from the other team's perspective, like, I asked around a little bit, and no one I talked to actually thought that Burrow would force his way out. Like, they were, you know, that isn't something that people that I've talked to on teams thought was something realistic. But I wouldn't say his words were like 100% an antidote. I did think, like, while he would look silly if he then did force his way out, they were strong enough that he would look silly if he did force his way out. But it wasn't like totally airtight or totally enthusiastic about Cincinnati.
I just think he doesn't have the kind of leverage that maybe Eli Manning had, and certainly not the kind of leverage that, you know, say John Elway had or Kyler Murray had, where you have another sport that you say, well, forget this, I'm just going to go do that. And maybe it was a realization of that a little bit, that, hey, at some point, you know, I might have to connect the dots here and mend these fences before I go into camp as public enemy number one.
Yeah, I did hear a few people saying, like, what happened between his passwords and the press conference, right? And maybe it was just that he was worried about being presumptuous and didn't want to assume he would be the number one pick. And people said, listen, you've just got to say this at your press conference. And he did. Or maybe there was some kind of conversation that took place or some kind of realization. But his tone was different enough on Tuesday than any past quotes or actions that had been parsed. And I think some of the past things had been parsed a little unfairly, right? I don't think there was ever like a clear indication. But he did say to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram that like he understood he had leverage. And he tried to explain that by saying he meant he had leverage in the combine process. He didn't have to work out. His season lasted a month longer than many other college programs, obviously because LSU won a national championship. And so he was trying to say that he meant that. So it was his best effort, I think, to quiet the noise, Connor. But the Burrow underground, that little play on words, Connor, would have gone straight over my head had you not laughed when you read it. Good
102
job.
Degree fever, and I still got it, Jenny.
That was impressive.
All right, what do we have for number four?
Buccaneers head coach Bruce Arians said that he is a plan at quarterback, but isn't revealing it yet. He also wants to see who is available in free agency. Does this spell the end for former number one overall pick Jameis Winston, or is this merely Arians' way of letting him know that the scholarship has run out and that it's time to play better?
I think that's what it is. Like, I think he's saying, hey, Jameis, we're going to look at other people out there, which means that I like someone better, and if I don't get them, then I'm going to bring you back, probably not on the deal that you would like, and we'll see where it goes from there. But I just feel like he's probably at the end of pretending that Winston is the long-term answer in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I agree with you. Because there's so much movement in the quarterbacks this year, and because there are so many teams with a need at that position, you can't commit really to anything at this point because you don't know if the chips are going to fall in your favor. So you do have to leave things somewhat open-ended. I mean, I think if the people in Tampa Bay were being honest, they would say, we know that Jameis has this flaw and we're not certain that he can fix it. You know, maybe they hope that he can fix it, but they also probably realize that 5 years in, he's played a ton of football and maybe you're just never going to fix it at this point.
That's what I think. I mean, the sample size is there, you know, and certainly quarterbacks in different systems and over time have gotten better. But that was what Bruce Arians' whole deal was. He was the quarterback whisperer. That was the name of his book. That was the thing that he thinks he can do better than any other coach in the league is coach people up and make get the best out of quarterbacks. He, Andrew Luck and Carson Palmer and Ben Roethlisberger. And I don't know. I mean, a 5,000-yard season is nothing to wag a finger at, but 30 touchdowns and 30 interceptions is just completely eyebrow raising.
Yeah. I mean, there has to be some frustration on that staff. And, you know, I think we believe, Connor, we've said this before, like at this point, like, I don't know. It's never, I don't think it's going to change, but if they don't have another option, then maybe they give it one more go.
The old, love the one you're with.
Right. Exactly. This is a classic case of that.
All right, number five, the Panthers did not entertain speculation that they would trade quarterback Cam Newton, who's still healing from a season-ending Liz Frank injury he suffered in 2019. Coach Matt Rhule said he would love to coach Newton and absolutely expects him to be on the roster. Stopping short of naming Newton the starter, this is a significant first test for Rhule as head coach and a major decision he needs to make before the game of quarterback musical chairs gets going.
Mm-hmm. I was standing there listening to Rhule talk and, you know, he's a first-time head coach, right, trying to, like, not back himself into a corner. And I think he basically said a lot of nothing in his press conference, which I imagine was his goal. And, you know, he said the couple times, the quote that really stood out, you know, was the, well, when Cam Newton is healthy, we know what kind of player he is. Well, of course, that's saying absolutely nothing because that has been the question about Cam the last few years is can he stay healthy and can you trust moving forward with him as the starter? So basically, they're still exploring their options. You know, would they trade Cam? Could they trade Cam? And what would their other options be? And so Matt Rhule basically wanted to get out of that press conference without committing to any one thing.
You know, he seems to be okay at sounding like he's saying a lot of things, but then isn't actually saying a whole lot of things. That seems to be something that I've noticed about him early on.
Well, that does seem to be a lot of coaches' approach. Maybe that's the approach of our podcast, Connor.
The Weak Side Podcast. Maybe could be 25 everyone. Minutes shorter.
Could not exist at all.
All right, so let me hop into the Oracle because I feel like this is related, and had a hard time staying not sick during the combine because I was just blood was boiling over the fact that now it seems to be a trend with Rule and with Joe Judge that we're not going to name anybody a starter. Nobody's a starter, and that's this whole new thing where not a new thing, but sort of a new version of an old tactic, right? To enter in with a clean slate. Joe Judge going as far as saying that he won't mention Daniel Jones by name, which just to me feels so ridiculous. Like sometimes I feel like you can overthink things, and I think that my Oracle prediction is that this is one of these weird things, especially for Judge, that's going to come back to bite him in the rear end. Just like a weird thing that you don't need to be weird about necessarily.
I think that's well said. That was a very bizarre way to handle that. I'm not sure where to go from there, Connor. But we can go to the Vrentis consensus.
Absolutely.
And I would say that my Vrentis consensus this week is that it's okay to say that nobody knows the answer, right? Like with Tom Brady, it's okay to say that at this point, nobody knows for sure how this process is going to unfold. And it's okay to say that you are not certain how the NFLPA vote will come out. I've seen like a lot of chatter, overheard a lot of chatter. Like someone said to me last night, Connor, like, well, I talked to 5 players on the team that I cover and they all plan to vote yes. And I'm thinking like, well, okay, that's like 5 players out of a 53-man roster. So like, and 5 players ultimately out of about 2,000 in the league, like they've just got to vote, So Tom Brady's just got to sign. So I think it's okay to say, hey, I don't know 100% how this thing is going to work out. We can examine all the possible outcomes. We can examine the factors contributing to the outcome, but I don't know at this point.
I think that's well said. Like, I feel like we've lost that part of it a little bit where, it used to be you just dropped all of your reporting at once and it's like, here's how it happened. But now it's like these little tidbits as it crawls along. But a lot of times they're not even pieces of the puzzle. They're just extra pieces that we don't even need and don't even tell us anything about the future. And this is an offseason that's especially ripe for some of that.
Yes. The rumor mills are churning with meaningless information, Connor.
We will rebound with The Bachelor next week once everybody gets caught up. Jenny, you didn't miss anything. I watched it through trying to fight this thing off. And sometimes I would fall asleep, but my temperature would be so high, I'd like think I was hallucinating. And so I'd be like, is Peter like, are they flying somewhere? What is he doing? And so my recap is not going to be entirely accurate because I'm not 100% sure what happened. I know some people were upset. That seems to be the main thing. Chris Harris wouldn't play down the rumor that maybe a television producer is involved. So I don't know. Maybe we'll at least come to an interesting conclusion in that front.
Also true of The Bachelor, Connor, that no one knows how it will end except for Peter.
True.
Or maybe Peter, the ending is still unwritten.
Very, very meta. Peter and Victoria F. are the only ones who really know how this is going to shake out because you heard it here first. Victoria F. is going to take this thing home.
Whoa. Wow, Connor. That is a dark horse pick if I've ever heard one.
That's right.
Well, Connor, I hope you feel better soon. Fever, flu is no fun. And you are a champ for writing a fantastic script this week that included a pun. And I am grateful for your efforts despite fighting off the 103 degree flu. So it's a little bit abbreviated version of the Weak Side Podcast. But we hope to be back in full strength next week. And, yeah. Continue adding some, maybe some meaningful thoughts.
I think so. Definitely.
Yeah.
All meaningful. Right. That's the goal from here on out.
All right. Well, everyone, thanks for listening. The MMQB Weak Side Podcast is me, Jenny Vrentis, and Connor Orr. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcast is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is Director of Editorial Projects and Product. Mark Moravec is Emeritus Executive Director of the MMQB. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.